in a series called Lesbian and Gay Journeys of Faith. Today's title is called Out of Our Tombs, Coming Out into Community. And what we're going to do is take a look at the story of Lazarus and Lazarus being called out of the tomb by Jesus. And as we've been doing throughout the week, we're looking at the spiritual journey, but particularly as reflected in the experiences of lesbians and gay men of faith. So that will be our focus on this very warm afternoon here. Let me just briefly preview or review of some of are there folks here who haven't been in any of the previous sessions? Let me just see, we've got a few. Let me just give you a brief overview of what we've done briefly. We've been looking at the whole perspective of some of the biblical stories and the faith journey coming out of the experiences of lesbians and gay men of faith. And one of the things we did in the very first session was compare two different approaches to understanding the issue of gay people in the church. One approach we labeled side A begins with a starting point that the sin around homosexuality is homosexual acts or homosexuality itself. Starting point B was that the sin around homosexuality is homophobia, or prejudice and discrimination against homosexual people. And what we've talked about is that it's the framework in B there that is the framework that we've been using for understanding the spiritual journey of lesbians and gay men. Spent some time looking at the whole issue of homophobia and how homophobia sets up the primary contradiction between gay people's experience of the gospel and their actual lived reality in their lives. And that contradiction causes gay people to enter into a spiritual process of reflection, trying to understand how we make sense of ourselves in this world, in the church, and on this journey. In that session, we also talked about part of the gay and lesbian faith journey is one from exile to hope. That when we come out as gay or lesbian people, we oftentimes find ourselves in exile from the communities that have shaped us. And like the Israelite community in Babylon, we cry out, how do we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Yesterday, we looked at some of the risks of reconciliation using the story of the Good Samaritan and imaging ourselves in that story and then how that story would change if we had been gay or lesbian in that. The premise on all of these is that gay and lesbian people have a distinctive gift to offer the church because of the distinctive nature of our spiritual journey. However, the point is not that these spiritual journeys are unique just to gay and lesbian people, but that all of us are on spiritual journeys, and the insights of other people can help us reflect on our own lives in that way. So today we're going to be focusing on the whole issue of what we, in the gay community, is called coming out of the closet. And the point of doing this is twofold, is to help us understand some of the unique perspectives of gay and lesbian people in their journeys, but also to help all of us look at the areas of our lives that are closeted, where we may be in closets of different shapes and sizes, and what happens then when we begin to move out of those closets and claim the honesty and integrity that God has given us through the gospel. So that's sort of a brief background about where we're headed. Let me just mention a couple things. The term coming out, is as it's used in the gay community, means coming out of the closet. And the idea being that when we are hiding our true identity from ourselves and from other people, we are in the closet. And when we begin to share who we are as gay and lesbian people, oftentimes first with those closest to us and then in ever-expanding circles, that's the process known as coming out of the closet, the process of self-disclosure and self-discovery that comes from being honest about who we are. So that's how I'm using it today here. Gay and lesbian people who go through the process of coming out have found many different places in Scripture where the experience of people in Scripture seems to mirror our own, or where we see our journeys reflected in the stories of Scripture. And so that's what we're going to do today, is take one particular story that has become a favorite in the gay and lesbian community. And that is the story of Jesus calling Lazarus back from death, calling Lazarus out of the tomb, back into community. What I'd like to do to start this is, there are three or four people who've got Bibles around, and I'd like us just to listen to the story. It's a fairly long one. It's about 45, 50 verses long, so you have plenty of time. Listen to the movement in this story. Listen to the characters in the story. But the thing I'd like you to particularly think about, from your experiences this week or your own life experiences, Listen to the story as if you were gay or lesbian, with gay or lesbian ears, to see where you might find contact with different parts of the story. And then we will talk about that for a little bit afterwards before going into another kind of exercise together. So who has the scripture that has the first verses?
Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness is not unto death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go into Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were but now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. Thus he spoke, and then he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awake him out of sleep. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover. Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him.
Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary sat in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, he who is coming into the world.
When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying quietly, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Then Mary, when she came where Jesus was and saw him, fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled, and he said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man? Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. I knew that thou hearest me always, but I have said this on account of the people standing by, that they may believe that thou didst send me. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with bandages, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to him, or said to them, unbind him and let him go.
Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on thus, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all. You do not understand that it is expedient for you that one man should die for the people, and that the whole nation should not perish. He did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day on, they took counsel on how to put him to death.
Okay, that's the story. What I'm going to do is take a few minutes just to talk together about what things you might have heard in the story that might be significant to a gay or lesbian person hearing this story in light of their experience, some of the experiences we've talked about of homophobia, movement away from that. Anything that come to mind for anyone?
The one thing that I noticed that I was reading is the verse that says, unbind him and let him go, someone else doing the act or helping to free that person.
Okay, Jesus in this case calls the community to participate. Jesus calls Lazarus out, but then turns to the community and says, unbind him and let him go. Coming out is never an individual act. It always involves other people. You come out to other people and that has ramifications. It calls people to respond. Yeah.
I'm always struck by Martha and Jesus' confrontation or dialogue together, and Jesus asks her if she believes in the resurrection, and she replies what must be like the standard answer, sure, I believe that everyone will be resurrected in the end. And then she's confronted with Jesus saying, no, it's going to happen now, which is totally new. But when I think of her first response, sometimes I think how empty that must be for her to say, sure, there's comfort, but it's such a far away way. And in terms of being in the closet, I can imagine looking for some kind of comfort or seeing the end of the tunnel, but it feeling like it's just at the end of the world.
Yeah.
And waiting to hear from the church and the community those words of Jesus, no, it's going to be now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. I mean, I remember so well when I was trying to figure out how to come out as both gay and Christian together, and really clinging to these words, no, where Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me shall not die. When you're coming out, you prepare yourself to die, figuratively and literally. And then to grasp onto this vision of hope in the resurrection of trusting in Jesus, instead of trusting in the messages of the world, is where sometimes the first glimpses of new life come when you're coming out.
I was just so touched by how much Jesus loved him, and it was so clear.
Jesus' great compassion and love for Lazarus. Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it at all before, but when Jesus hears that Lazarus is dead and says, well, I'm almost kind of glad this has happened because now you will see what I will do. And so the disciples and others would now see what Jesus would do in the situation, mm-hmm. rather than what would be the normal course.
Okay. And a couple of things, since you both brought up Jesus' response to that. Did you notice how, did Jesus ask how Lazarus died? Is he interested in how he got the disease or what he did to get it? No, his compassion is for Lazarus there. How about the illness? The scene opens up with Lazarus being ill. What would the illness be for gay or lesbian people? Pardon?
Abandonment
maybe one? Homophobia. I mean, that would be the one I would connect most with. It's the clearest example we have of what kills us. again, literally and figuratively, it's homophobia that kills us. It's homophobia that puts us in our tombs and doesn't let us out. What's the stone that keeps us there?
Fear.
Fear of what it means to leave behind the homophobia, the protective closet of the tomb there, and move out.
In reading that first section, the feeling that Jesus wasn't there right at the time, or it felt like he wasn't concerned right at the moment, or and Lazarus went ahead and died, and Mary said, "If you'd only been here, this wouldn't have happened." And I, you know, there has to be a sense of a real despair at some point before that healing occurs, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. Since almost of just a bottoming out and having reached the end of your rope, you've tried everything, but you're still in the tomb. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a lot of gay and lesbian people, we exhaust every possible means of trying to fit in. We build closets that are so thick, so impermeable, that we lose touch with our identities totally, because we built this whole total facade of presenting a different face to the outside world. And then we find that isn't enough, and that's when we reach the point of despair. Or we reach the point where you have lied so much about so much of who you are that it doesn't become, it's no longer worth living anymore. Everything is now a lie. And at that point, oftentimes, we have that experience of bottoming out. There are a couple points in the story where the disciples warn Jesus. Who do they warn him about? Okay, the people basically, and then later the religious authorities. Early on it's the people murmuring, later on it's the religious authorities and the Roman authorities. Why?
They want dead people to stay in their tombs.
Why would they want dead people to stay in their tombs?
Because theirs is the order. Because that's what's right in their order.
There are a variety of interpretations. One fairly liturgical one, or one church, is that it's a violation of purity codes. Again, remember how much of Israel's understanding of it being a holy people separate from other is set up in the purity codes. If you read the Leviticus test, that's why it's very important that they say he's been there 4 days. That means that he's already going to have started decomposing. Therefore, it violates the purity codes. It's a violation of holiness to do anything with this body. Jesus is deliberately violating the law of Israel. Clearly the religious authorities are going to be threatened. Right? How might that be experienced as a gay or lesbian person?
Well, it's a violation of what we perceive to be religious codes, you know, based on what we've been taught, you know, is in the Bible.
Okay.
It's a violation of some state statutes, too.
Certainly by a violation of both church and state, yeah. And yet, what must it feel like if you're a lesbian person for others to reach out on behalf of you, knowing that they're risking being in trouble with church and state? Can you see the parallel to how much it felt for Lazarus to have to know Jesus cared enough about him to violate what were the state and religious codes of his own time? Real experience of, as you mentioned, of the compassion of deep love. Any other thoughts before we move on to the next part here? I'm really touched by the way people are able to get into the imaginative aspect of what this story is like for gay and lesbian people. This is what it means when you hear people talk about bringing gay eyes to the Bible or gay ears. We hear these things oftentimes in a different way because our experience sets up a framework for hearing them that helps us to identify with those who are outcast in biblical times, and we see our own experience reflected in that. Well, we're going to have a chance to resurrect Lazarus here today, and we're going to have a chance to unbind the wounds and let Lazarus go. As a segue into that, I'd like to read a poem here. Actually, I'd like to ask the author if he'd be willing to read it. Could you willing to read your poem, Mark? Or
sure.
Mark has written a poem that he did in Madden's last week, called The Resurrection. Again, listen to the story and what we talked about, the mutual mirroring between the experience of Scripture and the experience of gay and lesbian people. And we'll use this as a way to get into our next step.
a resurrection. Lazarus was young. He was a man. Lazarus was a young man, and he was gay. And Lazarus lay rotting and alone in the dark and silent tomb of the closet. Alone and afraid, Lazarus, though he continued to breathe and move and walk and eat, was dead. His parents and family, oh, how they cried, usually behind closed doors, in the bathroom or at night when no one was around. And then he came to Bethany. And he cried too, but for a different reason. And he said, "Show me where he is." The family moaned, "What will the neighbors think? It's been so long. What will the church people say? It will cause a big stink." But the words were spoken even as they wailed. "Lazarus, come out." And Lazarus did. He came out and stood blinking in the new light. And now he was alive. Lazarus was truly alive. And a second call, a second command sounded in the air on that day. "Unbind him and let him go. Wind away the wrappings of death that still surround him. Unbind his hands to touch and his lips to kiss. Unbind from him his doubts of love, his alienation. Take away the stifling shroud of fear. And you, unbind from yourselves your fear of him, of the love he represents. Unbind from yourselves your fear of your own bodies. Unbind yourselves from hatred. And in the resurrection and letting go of Lazarus, set yourselves free. Amen."
We're going to have a chance to do that unbinding now. We have a Lazarus here. And this Lazarus is bound up with several pink triangles. Anyone here familiar with the symbol of the pink triangle for the lesbian and gay community?
That's where the Nazis should be.
Say, speak more loudly. Give it.
I just read that. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I wouldn't want it. The Nazis were trying to get rid of all homosexuals too, and so they, in the concentration camps, they have the pink triangle or the lavender.
Okay. People may or may not be aware that the second largest group of people killed, the second only to number to the Jews, were homosexuals by the Nazis, and that while Jews were made to wear a yellow Star of David as a sign of their crime of being Jewish, gay and lesbian people were forced to wear a pink triangle as their sign of being Jewish. Their crime of being gay or lesbian. Anybody know the only thing that distinguished gay and lesbian people from the other prisoners of war when the liberating armies came in?
They were the only ones not liberated.
They were the only ones put back in jail. When the so-called liberating armies came into the concentration camps, all of the gay and lesbian people were rounded up and re-imprisoned because homosexuality was a crime in the United States, in Britain, in France, and the Soviet Union. And so it has become the symbol of the gay community of never again, the same way that the Star of David is for the Jewish community. That we will speak out now before it gets to the point of being concentration camps. In terms of coming out, we talk about coming out, you can imagine a little bit as like ripples in the water of a lake. You throw a stone in and you have circles that are very close to where the stone drops, and then you have further and further out. That's what it's like when we come out. We oftentimes tell the people who are closest to us first, gain some confidence, gain some trust, begin testing the waters, and move outward there. And so as we resurrect Lazarus, you'll find that each one of these triangles is labeled with a different coming out possibility for Lazarus. And the community, whether the community unbinds Lazarus or rebinds Lazarus, depends on how we respond to Lazarus as Lazarus is coming out. So what we need here is we need someone who will be Jesus and order Lazarus to come out, and then order the rest of us to unbind Lazarus. And then we need people who can, one by one, help us unbind him and read what the pink triangle is. We'll take a minute or so with each one just to see ways that we might respond to Jesus' charge of unbinding. Do I have a Jesus here? Barb, would you be Jesus?
No.
you have a good voice.
Yeah, I have to go
with
dish team.
Jesus has to be a dish team. You have two lines, Barb. Two lines. Lazarus, come out. Unbind him. Let him go.
Okay. Do you want me to come up there?
Yes. Come up to Lazarus here.
Okay, Lazarus, come out.
Now, Lazarus has been dead for a while, so Lazarus may need a little help getting up here.
Unbind him.
Do I tell people now?
Unbind him, let him go.
And let him go.
Okay. We have someone who would come and read the first triangle. All right. And then as you read the triangle, after you've read the triangle, hang on to the binding, and just will continue to unbind.
Parents, Mom and Dad, I need to be honest with you and tell you that I'm gay. I've been so afraid to tell you because I'm afraid you will hear this as bad news or blame yourselves for something I consider to be a wonderful gift. But I love you and want your understanding, acceptance, and affirmation.
How might we respond to Lazarus there as parents? Or people who might see ourselves in parenting roles.
I'll always love you.
A hug.
A hug. For many of us who are gay or lesbian, that's the hardest coming out to our parents. We have received a lot of love from our parents and don't want to be perceived as disappointments to them or have them blame themselves. And so as parents contemplate that possibility, think about the message you want your child to hear. Yeah.
I would want to tell my children that whoever you are, you're just wonderful.
Whoever you are, you're wonderful. Okay. How about the next triangle? We've got more of the wrapping here. Hold on, Lazarus.
Brothers and sisters, you need to know that I am gay. This feels risky to tell you because you know how much I love being an uncle or aunt to your kids. And I don't want to lose that, but it's important to me that you, and eventually they, know who I really am.
Those of us who are brothers or sisters, how might we respond to Lazarus?
Similar to the parents, with love, that you love them no matter what, and that you want to support them.
Help you tell the parents.
Help you tell the parents.
Help you raise your kids.
Help you raise your kids. The fear for many gay people is that we'll be cut off from children. Even though statistics show that over 90% of child sex abusers are heterosexual men, gay and lesbian people tend to get scapegoated for child abuse, and so we're oftentimes cut off from kids. All right, got another piece of the wrapping here. Martin?
Best friend. I have something to tell you. Even though you've been my best friend for years, I haven't been completely honest with you. I'm gay. Your friendship means so much to me, and I don't want to lose it. But I can't be honest
if our friendship, or if you are unable to accept me for who I am, then our friendship will have to change.
Say that was one of the moments of greatest grace in my life when I came out to my best friend, for whom I'd already been the best man at his wedding, and been named the God's father of his son, and was pretty afraid that I was going to lose that friendship after being so many years of considering each other best friends, but me hiding this part from him. And I was all ready to protect myself and leave the friendship, and he just sort of said, "Are you?" This doesn't change who we are. You're still my best friend. And that's been a real blessing. Again, things for us to think about in terms of the people in our lives. All right, we got another piece of the wrapping coming here.
The pastor. As my pastor, it is important to me that you know that I am gay. It has been a long journey for me to be able to accept myself as both gay and Christian, but I now see that that is who God created me to be. I want to talk to you about making our congregation a more welcoming place for gay and lesbian people.
What are ways that we can support our pastors? Almost every pastor, within a certain amount of time, will have somebody come talk to them, either about themselves being gay or lesbian, or about having a family member or a friend and not knowing what to do with it.
I think that's a big risk for a pastor, because they're certainly going to be judged by their members, you know, those who still take, you know, the scriptures. I think probably one of the best things that a pastor could do is maybe to try to have some adult ed classes on that topic. Mm-hmm. You know, some forums.
It is important for the pastor to be able to find out some of the information from others.
Okay.
So that, the pastor can be more informed in dealing with other people.
So making sure the pastor has information.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing would be, to the extent, as a pastor, it always surprises me that people think that pastors represent God. But to that extent that the pastor represents God's love or wrath, I think it's really, really important to say unconditionally, God loves you no matter what, and to say that.
I've also talked to a lot of pastors for whom have said, "I just feel so alone in this. I know what I need to do, but I don't feel any support in my congregation for being supportive." And that's where I think those of us who are in congregations can let our pastors know how important we feel it is that, one, we support them, and two, that they find they be available to reach out to gay and lesbian people or their families.
That's why it's so important for you to be here to inform some of us to go back.
Okay, Lazarus, hang on there for a moment. We've got some more binding here. It's now wrapped around your feet. Someone else who could come up.
Counselor. You should know that much of the stress I have been feeling lately is because I know now that I am gay, and I'm trying to figure out how best to tell those who are important to me. I hope you can help me in this process.
Any thoughts or insights that come up in terms of the counseling relationship?
What a joy to hear those words. Yes, I can help you. Yes. Yeah, to find the right counselor and to have them be supportive and provide information and give you the tools to be honest and begin the process of embracing oneself and to be supportive through that process.
You hit one of the key things there too, which is finding the right counselor. People may know that less than 20 years ago, still the American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Associations, both considered homosexuality an illness. They operated outside a framework there. And so when gay people went to counselors, usually the counseling they received was to try and change their orientation through a variety of psychotherapy, shock treatment to the genitals. There have been times when there have been frontal lobotomies done, all under the premise that the way to help homosexuals was to change them. There are still a lot of counselors out there who operate under those premises. One of the things that we can be doing is knowing counselors, knowing what they do. And so if someone comes to you and says, look, I really need some to talk to somebody about this, steer them in the right direction rather than the wrong one. I know there are probably folks in this room who've had those kinds of experiences. And so another way that we can be aware as people are in their journey of coming out.
Many times you can go ahead and have get into some support groups as well.
Yes.
Get in contact with, and I've had people meet other people who are of the same category, professional, other people, and arrange even a time when they can get together and talk or have dinner or do something so that they know that they're not alone. I mean, the process for a gay person, I think, needs to... they need to do that in some way themselves, and if you can connect them with other people, I think they can grow themselves at times without sometimes the assistance of other people.
Very, very important point. Thanks for bringing that up. That one of the most important things when gay and lesbian people come in for counseling is the tremendous isolation we often feel. And so if you find yourself in a counseling situation, be very helpful to try to know the resources, how that person can get hooked up with a support group, a discussion group, even a book to read. I remember one of the first and most helpful things we ever took place at Holden Village when I came out here in 1980, and the pastor at that time gave me a book that called Embodiment by James Nelson. First time I'd ever even considered that it was possible to have sexuality and spirituality be in the same room at the same time. That book saved my life. So knowing what resources are available, hooking people up with other people, if you find yourself in a counseling situation. All right, closing in now on some of these triangles. Got someone here who could read?
Job supervisor. I'm concerned about the anti-gay atmosphere here in our office. I am gay and it is difficult to listen silently to anti-gay jokes and gossip. If I come out to my coworkers, will you support me?
What do we do with this one?
That'd be tough. It's the job supervisor mails if you're a homophobic.
Okay. Job supervisor. No guarantee that the job supervisor is going to be accepting. How about the office environment?
It could get pretty hostile.
It can be pretty hostile.
Some may not even have thought of the jokes they have told, and then afterwards be both ashamed and very willing to change once they realize that it's not just not a condition but a person.
Mm-hmm. So depending on the environment, the work environment may be similar to churches where you can bring in speakers, have educational programs, and raise awareness.
Mm-hmm. Bring in education stuff, yeah.
Okay. I'm an attorney and I deal a lot with discrimination law. And Minnesota, of course, is different than the law in other parts of the country. It has stronger laws, and there isn't any help really in the law for being gay. It is in a protected class. But in this day and age, with it not acceptable any longer to be harassing in the workplace, and for sexual harassment to be unacceptable and to have economic consequences. I think the supervisor needs to know that there isn't a place for sexual jokes in the workplace anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a kind of a general, gender-neutral framework. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be exposing yourself in your beliefs, just there isn't a place for this in anybody's workplace because it's offensive to a lot of people.
One very simple thing we can all start doing is just saying that. I find that really offensive.
But that's not simple.
I mean, but that's not simple.
I agree we should all do that.
Well, it comes back to when we were talking about the risk involved, Jesus' risk of upsetting the authorities, upsetting folks. But one thing, a lot of times people say to me, you know, I've never known a gay person. I've never had a gay person talk to me. And, of course, what they really, I think, are saying is they've never known anybody who they knew was gay. But all of us have known people who are gay, and we need to be asking ourselves, if they haven't told us that, why? Why not? Why haven't they trusted us to come out to us? Not to point all the blame towards ourselves, there are lots of other reasons, but I'll tell you one thing, let you know a secret. Gay and lesbian people are some of the most perceptive listeners that I know. We listen very carefully to conversations and body language and kind of things. And we pick up very, very quickly who's safe to talk to and who's not. If you challenge one anti-gay joke or stereotype, chances are good a gay person heard you do that. And chances are when they need someone to talk to, they're going to think, this is somebody I can trust. So I just put that again out there. When people always ask, well, what can I do? I'm not gay. I don't know anybody who's gay. Creating a safer environment for gay people is one way we can start. And you're right, Martin. It's not easy. It's not easy. People quickly turn on you and say, oh, well, why is he making these comments? And that's, again, one of the ways homophobia operates, to keep us in our tombs, in our closets. All right, let's keep moving. We want to get through, we want Lazarus to be unbound before first setting. All right, we've got another triangle here.
Sunday school co-teacher. Sunday school co-teacher. As much as my co-worker in nurturing our church's children in the faith, I need you to know that I'm gay. I'm concerned about the ways we pass along negative stereotypes of gay people in our teaching, and want to work with you to help our children feel free to grow into whatever person God has created them to be. Read the Lazarus story.
One of the places that gay children, and I know a lot of people aren't always comfortable with those two words, but those of us who are gay or lesbian, many of us have memories go way back. And knowing we might not have been able to name ourselves as gay or lesbian, but we knew we were different. One of the places we get the most mixed messages is Sunday school in the church. If you remember the story of the boy the other night, talking about there, the boy had heard both the good news of the gospel, the boy had also heard that he was evil because he loved other boys. And he got both of those messages from church. One of the things that we can be doing is thinking about what is it our children are learning about their faith and gay and lesbian people. And you know, this can be done at all sorts of different levels. I think part of the fear is that people are afraid to talk to children because we think they have to get a college education out of the conversation. But so let me just share a story I had with my 8-year-old nephew this last year. My nephew and I spent a lot of time together, and we're pretty good buddies. And he likes to listen to one of my tapes that has some songs by a gay male singing group. And he particularly likes a song that says, "I think I've made a monster out of you." Because it's one of these songs where there's a person finds someone who's very closeted and helps them out of the closet so much so that they find their own light. And says, "I've created a monster, you're no longer dependent on me." But anyway, one of these times Matthew and I were driving along, and he just looked at me and he said, "Uncle Dan, what's gay?" And I said, "Well, gay is when two men love each other, or two women love each other, the way your mom and dad love each other." He said, oh, that makes sense. So about 6 months passed, and I was sort of preparing myself for these conversations. And 6 months later, I was with Matthew again, and he looked at me and goes, Uncle Dan, are you married? Here we go again. No? I said, well, are you going to get married? I said, I don't really know, Matthew, if I will or not. And he goes, I thought, oh boy, how am I going to spend this one? I said, well, I hope you never get married, because if you get married, you won't have all this free time to spend with me. Part of that is that a lot of times we read in our own worries into what kids are really asking. But then the really fun part was, this just happened 2 weeks ago. I was driving the length of California with Matthew and his younger sister, Sarah, who's five. And we were listening to a tape full of love songs, and I was being very just smitten with love, and they were all going, oh, gross, Uncle Dan, oh, yuck. We came to a song that was all about kissing. And they were like, oh, kissing, oh, that's the worst. And then my niece Sarah said, well, Uncle Dan, who have you kissed? Now again, remember people were asking about why we have these decisions about coming out. Well, this is one of those places. Do I lie? Do I tell the truth? Do I want my niece to grow up knowing that her uncle lies to her? Do I find a way to tell the truth? So I said to her, I said, well, I've kissed my friend Diane, and I've kissed my friend Eric, and I've kissed my friend Paul. And Sarah said, oh, gross, you kissed a boy? And I didn't have a chance to respond when Matthew was sitting in the front seat, turned around and said to her, he says, oh, Sarah, that's okay, that's called gay. Gay is good, right? I'm the And so we had a great conversation, and we talked about it's fine for boys to kiss boys, and boys to kiss girls, and girls to kiss boys, and girls to kiss girls. The important thing is that we love the person we kiss. So it was we had about a 5 or 10 minute conversation. We got to the end of it, and they were willing to see the point it was fine for you to love anybody you wanted to, but kissing was still gross. But again, you know, the stories and the way we talk to our children influences the way they grow up. So we need to think about that. All right, let's keep going. Let's get Lazarus unbound here.
New friends, I'm really enjoying getting to know you and anticipate that we may develop a strong friendship. There's one thing that is important for you to know about me, however, and that is that I'm a gay. I hope this does not make you less interested in me as a friend.
The scariest and hardest things about being gay is coming out is not a one-time process. Anytime you meet somebody new, you face the decision, do I let this person know? When do I let this person know? How will it affect me? In what ways? Again, these are the reason I think the more we can signal ahead of time that we're open and affirming of people different than ourselves makes those kinds of interactions easier. Let's just brainstorm for a minute. What are some of the ways that you might signal that? You never know which of the new friends you're meeting is going to be gay or lesbian. Usually not. So how might we just in our everyday manner signal that we're open, friend affirming?
Not use put downs for anybody.
Okay. Not use put downs for anyone. Very important. Uh-huh. You signal you're open to all people.
Dan, you know, I think one of the fears there is that gay person or lesbian person might like them. And I think that's troubling for people. And I know of one example, a young friend of mine. I forgot if it was a college roommate or housemate or what, I can't remember. She found out later that she was a lesbian and was receiving love letters from her. And you know, that was an unwelcome attention. And I think this is a reality.
Good point. It's, for any of us, it's very uncomfortable to have unwelcome attention from someone we're not interested in, for whatever reason.
And it could be of the opposite sex, too, but it's more uncomfortable, I think.
Okay, well let me just ask, particularly for the women in the group, are there any women in this room who have had unwanted attention from men? Yeah, were you able, do you still interact with men? You have to. You may also be in love with them. I don't mean to be flip, but I'm oftentimes struck with, it's just assumed women will learn how to do this and it's no big deal. But people read or get very, very concerned that if a gay or lesbian person expresses interest in me, what do I do? Well, I would say most women probably have pretty good skills at this point about telling the man where to get off. Or being polite. I'm flattered by your attention. I need to know that I'm not interested. But it is really important that we acknowledge those fears and be able to talk through them and stuff with people. And that is that's frankly one of my biggest concerns when I come out to people. I don't want people to think I'm coming on to them, but I want them to know who I am. And so it's you know, you walk this tightrope of what are the messages you are trying to send versus what are the messages people are picking up. And it's always interesting for me because I love to be in a group closeted for a while and see what my interactions are with people and then come out. And I can pick up all the avoidance patterns pretty quickly. Who's comfortable, who's not. It is part of the reality of being gay.
Dan, as I listen closely to my friends and my attempts to discern who I could talk to and who I couldn't about my sexuality, I picked up on things like their religious affiliation. Friends who were in fundamentalist churches or churches that I knew I wasn't welcome in, I had a strong sense that they wouldn't be welcoming to me either. So I think it is important to, if your beliefs don't reflect your denominations, that you just know or look at that. Other things that, jokes are an obvious one, but also how people live their life in other ways, like how welcoming they are to anyone with differences, whether they be black or Chinese or of different faiths or, you know, any kind of differences, handicapped people, etc.
Let me just mention a couple, and then we'll move on because our Lazarus has well been covered up much longer than we expected. The language you use. Gay and lesbian people struggle all the time with invisibility. We're invisible in most things. I pick up right away when I hear someone use the word gay or lesbian comfortably. If someone says, I have a friend who's a lesbian, when we were talking about this, I go, wow, I can talk to that person. When people don't ever make any reference in their conversations to anything gay or lesbian, I think, well, for whatever reason, this isn't a part of their who they are, and I'll think twice about it. Other things that are really important, when I go into someone's office or their library, if I see a book on the shelf that has a gay theme on it, I think, huh, some openness here. Very simple thing, I've seen some counselors who make sure they have a little pink triangle somewhere in the room. You know, it's an immediate signal. This is for someone who's safe to talk to. So we just need to be thinking about the unconscious signals we're giving out in terms of whether we're creating space for openness for people. All right, let's get Lazarus unbound here. We're getting close to the end. Got one more, we need a couple more people. Someone who's willing to come up here?
Neighborhood committee. As a longtime resident of this neighborhood, I'm concerned about the attacks on women and gay people that have created an unsafe climate for us. I am gay, and I would like your support in making this a safe neighborhood for all of us.
Almost regardless of where you live, you can be sure there are gay or lesbian people living there as well. So we don't need to belabor the point, but be thinking about, do you live in a place where gay people would feel welcome, where they feel safe, where they could walk with their partner? If not, why not? Are there things you could be doing? I live in New York City, which is generally thought to be fairly hospitable to gay people, but the amount of gay bashing that's going on there now is just escalating right and left, so I no longer feel safe walking on the streets, even in Greenwich Village, which is sort of the gay neighborhood there. There's a whole incident of young people from New Jersey coming in to go gay bashing on Saturday and Friday nights. Our church is addressing these things. Again, the right to security and where we live is really critical. Other ways that all of us can think about the neighborhoods we live in and whether they'd be welcoming to gay people. Let's get the last one out here and then we'll see what Lazarus has to say to us. Got one more here.
This is landlord. I know the apartment complex has a policy of only letting in immediate family of tenants, but the woman you have seen me with often is my lover, my spouse. Please treat her as you would any other family member.
Let me just ask, how many folks know whether the city or the town or the state you live in protects gay and lesbian people from being evicted from housing?
I know it doesn't.
You got it. I see a hand up over here. You do know? Where do you live?
The state of Oregon still does, but there is the, we do have current legislation, current pending.
Springfield doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
And some cities do.
This is a very real concern for a lot of gay and lesbian people. One of the reasons why people don't come out, we don't have legal protection. There are only five states in the country that include gay people in the civil rights legislation. There are a handful more cities. But there are lots of issues we face in that. So for example, if our spouse dies, we're not considered legal family in most places. If the lease is in the apartment, the spouse's name, you're out. Getting into hospitals, a lot of hospitals and critical care units only allow you in if you're immediate family. If you're the gay spouse, sorry, find someone else to go visit your spouse. So these kinds of questions, do we come out so we let people know who this significant person is in our life and why they're here? Or do we try and protect ourselves and that person? What kind of issues we face. Well, Lazarus. Come out, Lazarus. You've got a new community surrounding you, Lazarus.
Yeah. I'm probably not who you thought I was. I'm female. You've kept saying he all the time.
I guess, yeah. Allison.
Yeah, well.
We've only got a few more minutes, but I know Lazarus had a song that she would
like to.
I think we'll do that. We'll take a couple minutes before we close up. You can all, leave your bindings down there if you'd like to.
Dan, I'd just like to say that right now in the state of Oregon, there's an initiative on the ballot to be voted upon in November, 120,000 signatures were collected that would add to the state's constitution that homosexuality is abnormal and perverse, and not only limit, but encourage the state not to participate in anything that would affirm or encourage that behavior right. In terms of housing and employment.
It's directly opposite to the current state law.
As I understand it, it would also invalidate any local ordinances that give rights for that protection.
The Constitution of the state.
Yeah.
But don't you think that's because there's a lack of knowledge about the causes of it, or the fact that it's not something that you choose to do? I mean, this is where education.
This is where education is really important. This is where the church is speaking out that this is a gospel issue. It is really important. Many of us who are
quite a cure in the state.
Yeah, I know there's quite a cure in the state. And the loudest voices of the churches have been in support of this initiative. The conservative churches are speaking very loudly that this is the way they're going to protect children by getting rid of homosexuals. So for those of us who don't find ourselves in that stance, it's important that we find voices to speak out. Allison, let's...
I was supposed to come up with something wise to say upon my coming out. And so I thought that I would play a song that I wrote a couple years ago when I was struggling with my own coming out process and trying to find information about the gay and lesbian community and realizing that because of all of our closets, there's very little information to be found. And sort of learning a bit about how different cultures over time have treated the gay and lesbian community. Thank you. silence and fear. And I am wondering who knows the stories anybody hears. How many thousand witches burned that holy Christian stakes? How many thousands turned to ash in Hitler's foul way?
Time to come back and talk about what this means in terms of spirituality, but I'll have a list that I'll just leave up and we can talk a little more next time. I'd encourage you to think about the feelings you may have felt as we went through the unbinding process, and the feelings that come up as people come out, and what happens when we come out and create community in the process of that. This is just by no means a complete list, but these are things that are part of our Christian spiritual tradition that I think the whole process of coming out gives us deeper insight into. Not just gay and lesbian people coming out, but whenever we come out of whatever closets that hold us. It teaches us the difference between cheap and costly grace, because you've got to learn to let go and trust in God. It teaches us about what it means to follow Jesus in the way of the cross, to accept suffering for the sake of a larger goal of justice and liberation and salvation. It teaches us what it means to both voluntary suffering for the sake of others,